From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 20th day of June, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, out of Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be along in a few moments, too. He'll take a look at today's agricultural news for us, and then I'll talk for the first time this growing season with extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. All's been very quiet on the insect front so far, but there are some interesting prospects a-brewing. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look now at the numbers as they settled in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, futures in the wheat pit like this, nearby July at 966.5, 14.5 higher for lower for the day, rather. September at 984.25, down 14.5. And December futures in the wheat pit at 907.25, 14.75 lower. July corn futures 721.25, 6.5 cents lower. September futures at 735.5, down 6.25, and December futures were down 6 cents today at $7.55.5. March corn futures 770.25, down 5.75 on a Friday afternoon. Soybeans now, July contract 1532.5, 13 lower. August down 13 as well at $15.35 a bushel. And September soybeans 1515.5, 12.5 cents lower. Your new crop November at $15.09, 12.5 cents lower. July bean meal futures, $411.70, the final trade, down $7.80. July bean oil futures at $63.88, down 24 for the day. June live cattle futures, $95.57.5, 40 cents higher. August at $104.85, up $1.40 for the afternoon. August feeder cattle at $113.57.5, $2.47.5 higher. And the September futures at $115.35, up $2.15. July lean hog futures, $77.17.5, $2.90 higher. August contract up $2.92.5. It settled at $78.37.5 for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for this afternoon. Across the two-state region, a flood warning remains in effect for some rivers in northern, western, and southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana. That until further notice. Tonight, our own meteorologist Ed Keyser says partly cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms too. Lows will range this evening from 57 to 63. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sunshine, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs will range between 80 and 85, says Mr. Keyser. The extended forecast, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms will occur over the weekend. Rainfall amounts will be highly variable, with some locations picking up an inch or two, while others will receive little or nothing in this next rain event. Mostly dry weather expected early next week, although a few scattered showers may linger in Indiana on Monday.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Here's a quick look at the outside markets. July crude oil futures are now trading at $134.80. They're up $2.80. The August at $134.48. That's $1.88 higher. July ethanol at $2.90, up 5 2/10 of a cent. The natural gas trading at $13.02 2/10 of a cent, up 16 1/10 of a cent. And the heating oil futures at $3.77 5/10 are up 6 1/10 at this hour. July propane changed the trade today at $1.87.5 for the afternoon. And Dow Jones Industrial Average now down just about 217 points at 11,846. You're listening to WILL in Urbana, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm joined now by Mike Zuzlo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi there, Todd.
Let's talk about the trade for the day and the week. What did you see?
Well, mostly setback here. These corn down about a dime, Nove beans down about 20 cents, and the July wheat down about 15 or so cents, plus or minus. So a little bit of a setback, ideas that the government's going to get back involved, ideas that inflation's hurting some of the emerging markets, especially China and India. I think those are the biggest things that are probably directing trade right now. Some of the spread action would indicate that we're getting more done in the beans, and that's why the Nove beans took a hit. The July Nove bean spread really didn't act very excitable, though, this week, which was kind of a surprise to us.
We had a cattle on feed report that was out this afternoon, but before we get that USDA had some other news for us on the grain side today too, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. Just after the close, Reuters reported that NASS will re-interview producers during the week of June 23rd in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, and Wisconsin. This is in a statement from NASS. They will provide additional information about producers' harvesting intentions for corn, beans, and sorghum. And this will be reflected, part of it, in the June 30th report. They still stick with their original idea that they're going to go back again in July and look at planted and harvested acres, which will show up on the August 12th crop report. But, you know, like we talked about this morning, the stakes are just too high this year to be waiting a month and a half for new information and allow the trade to pretty much do whatever it wants to as far as speculating about how bad or good it is. So I'm happy to see this. Hopefully we'll get some more certainty in the markets and be able to plan, and livestock and ethanol producers won't be hung out, you know, for another month and a half especially.
Dave Dickey and I were having a discussion about this before we came on the air here this afternoon and trying to decipher whether, if the USDA were able to collect any numbers at all, how valid they might be. So let's start with the idea of going back and asking producers how many acres they're going to put in the ground and trying to get a handle on acreage. Do you think that by the 23rd of June, if they do it that week, that farmers will really know what they're going to plant or replant, especially in parts of Iowa?
I think 90% will, yes. I think you'll have an idea if you're a producer whether you're even going to try. I think the other thing goes back to the replant. You're going to be out there getting the replanting done right now if you're trying to get beans in on corn stubble and or beans replanted for a second or third time. I think the other thing we kind of underestimate that the USDA's tried to refine, and it looks like they've done a pretty good job, you know, is the satellite data. They really have a pretty good way of telling what other countries are able to harvest and what their yields are going to be based upon how red or green that month is versus last year at the exact same time. I think between the satellite data and the urgency that farmers have right now, it's just like talking to Sherman. He was coming back from Terre Haute today, and he talked about how he had seen some ground that wouldn't dry out for at least 30 days. And that's what, the water would be gone in 30 days, and then it would be another week and a half before anybody could do anything. So I think the truly flooded areas you're too far gone on, and the USDA is going to pick up a lot of that in this, my expectation is anyway.
Well, if they do that, they're going to have to combine those two in order to give an average national yield, because if you come back with a planted acreage, it could be way off on what yield might be.
There's no question about it, and I think that's where you have that double whammy this year, especially where you have both acreage and yield way, way, way out there. Now, the yield, you know, we just talked about acreage for the last couple minutes. I think the yield, it could take all the way to the fall, if not after the fall, for us to really get a good hard, fast mindset on yield, especially in the beans, because I was just surprised by how many fields were just emerging, Indianapolis and on east into Dayton, Ohio, when I went through there yesterday on I-70. I just couldn't believe how many newly planted fields were just starting to emerge. And so if you turn off hot and dry in that area, which I think the Chicago trade thinks that's where the top-end yields are at this point because it hasn't been flooded as bad, If you turn off hot and dry the next 20 or 30 days, the beans just aren't going to handle that well at all. So you could go several months before you really know the outcome on yield. I do believe that, whereas the acres, I think we'll have a pretty good idea by June 30th.
You know, can you go back to 93 at all? And I know that the flood was in relatively a different region, but less so in Iowa than here in Illinois at that point.
No, you can. That's a good point. You really can. We lost about 6.4% of the corn acres and about 6.6% on the beans. And the thing about, you know, 1993 and what Chuck and I were talking about today is what we don't want to have happen is the USDA drag this out, because in 93 that's exactly what they did. They really didn't get on the horse and start cutting acres or yield until August, September, and then they did it month after month.
But didn't the flood occur a lot later that year than it did this year?
Well, I remember July 4th, we had a party, and some of our friends couldn't make it across the Mississippi.
Right.
So it was probably, I'd guess, 2 weeks later, I'm thinking, you know. But it was still
93.
Yeah, maybe so. It could have been. Yeah, sure could have been. But still, to wait till September in 1993 like they did, because I went back month to month, for them to wait that long, it just was way too long. Of course, we didn't have the satellite data at that point.
Yeah,
either.
Well, here's my thought on that one. If we're so much earlier, maybe that 6% cut, roughly speaking, that you told us about in corn and soybeans both, in acreage, right?
Right.
Right. Might not show up that way this year. If we're 3 weeks earlier, certainly those acres could be replanted potentially and have an entirely different sort of circumstance than what happened in 93.
No, you're exactly right, and that's why the yield is, especially on beans, you know, there's an argument out there in Chicago and in a lot of other communities that you're losing corn acres to beans to be planted. I think that's certainly possible, but I think in the heavily damaged areas, I doubt whether we'll get either of them in. But your point's very well taken. We could end up losing 10% on corn acres and only 1 or 2 or 3 on bean acres,
mm-hmm.
but then we go back to, okay, can we really get a 42.1 yield out of those replanted beans? I suspect not. I doubt very seriously if we'd be able to get over a 40-bushel yield if history was any indicator.
Okay. We probably better talk about the cattle on feed numbers that came out this afternoon from USDA as well. June 1 at 96% for on feed. Average trade guess at 97.296, certainly within the trade range. Placed in May at 88%, range from 83 to 96.3 with an average of 90.4 from the analyst. And marketed in May at 102, and that's pretty darn close to what the average analyst estimate was at 101.7. Much of an impact on Monday?
No, I think the marketing's number was going to be the most looked at because the offers this week were at 96. I suspect those offers will get snatched up because of the strong markets we had here this week. And June futures, that chart looks like it may want to try and set up and test its contract high of around 97.25, which about a dollar and a half from where it closed at today. So overall, a pretty good report, I think.
Open-ended. Is there anything you wanted to make sure you discussed today, since I got you off track just a bit, that we didn't get to?
Probably the only big thing that we need to watch over the weekend is Argentina's grain boycott is supposed to be ending here at midnight. That took a lot of the steam out of the beans. We'll see if that actually happens or not, because there was a lot of food shortages coming into today, and there was a lot of worries that this thing was going to go on and on and on. So we'll see if that really does deflate and the risks down there start to abate a little bit.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. His business partner will join us for Commodity Week this week. Chuck Shelby will be in today when we record at 4:30. You can pick that program up off our website at willag.org after about 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. In just a few moments, Dave Dickey will be here with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, VeriSun officials say it plans to delay the opening of two newly constructed ethanol plants. And Heartland Ethanol says it's abandoning plans to build as many as 7 ethanol plants in Illinois. Financial analyst Credit Suisse says that over the next 6 months, there could be a number of similar ethanol plant shutdowns and abandonments. Credit Suisse says high corn prices and a growing reluctance by lenders to finance ethanol expansion will lead to the pullback. The National Agricultural Statistics Service says its end-of-the-month crop acreage report will not likely adequately address farmland flood damage. NAS says it will re-interview farmers next week in flooded areas of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, and Wisconsin. Partial data could be on the June report. NAS says it will conduct a more extensive survey in July of planted and harvested acres and release that information in its August 12th crop production report. Sam Willett is director of public policy for the National Corn Growers Association. Willett expects many producers with flooded fields to still try to plant.
We may end up being surprised by some decisions that growers will make in terms of getting back in the fields. And so obviously we're hopeful that the conditions that prevail, that the production projections aren't as bleak as some people might think.
County FSA offices are continuing to collect flash reports on crop losses. South Korea and the U.S. are resuming beef talks today. Meanwhile, South Korea's president has apologized for his controversial April decision to allow the resumption of near full U.S. beef imports. The Associated Press is reporting that Seoul is pledging to keep U.S. beef out of South Korea unless Washington agrees to ban meat from older cattle. And producers with flood damage may not receive a check until late next year unless USDA decides to issue advance payments based on estimated base payment numbers. The new Farm Bill has permanent disaster aid, but operating regulations are not yet in place, and the program bases payment on season average prices, a number that won't be known until October of 2009. Yesterday, President George Bush toured flooded Iowa and promised funding from FEMA's Disaster Relief Fund. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at the WILL radio stations, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can hear that program tomorrow morning, if you'd like, on this radio station. Or you can listen to it on the web. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what took place in the markets. Up next, the entomologists at Illinois have had a slow and calm start to the growing season in the Midwest, they say. But while things are quiet now, there have been some lingering questions about rootworms, earworms, western bean cutworms, and even the bean leaf beetle. Earworms this season are a blip on the radar, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. We'll come back to that blip in a moment because it could be pretty important. It's an internal entomological kind of important at this time, but not one Steffi has gotten questions on from farmers. On the other hand, he does hear from them about the western corn rootworm.
A lot of the fields were saturated with water at the very least. Many were flooded, ponded. How did rootworms survive? We don't know. If larvae hatched out into saturated or flooded soils, they likely did not survive. So farmers that are replanting now are planting for the first time now are wondering whether they need rootworm protection. We don't think so, although late hatching rootworms could still come along and sort of bite into their profits. So we're kind of on the cusp right now, I suspect, by last full week in June, rootworm control won't be necessary for any corn that's planted at that date.
Now back to the earworms. Steffi says this season is different than past years because the earworm counts are very, very high, and that makes them worth watching.
Earworms are the same species as cotton bollworms, which they found a resistant population of bollworms to BT cotton recently. So we'll want to see what earworms do when they get into some of our BT corn fields here in Illinois. It may not have any bearing whatsoever. But the large number of earworms that we're catching in traps right now are more similar to the numbers that we capture in the summer. So they bear watching. They don't usually cause damage to commercial corn, but they can.
That's two to watch and do nothing about. The earworm and the western corn rootworm. Let's add another insect to that list for Illinois corn farmers, the western bean cutworm. Don't let the name fool you. It is an insect pest of corn, and it moved into Illinois from the west in 2004.
We had a pretty noticeable moth light in 2006, but to be honest, the numbers in 2007 were smaller. We have pheromone traps that will be erected during mid to late June by a bunch of cooperators in the state, and they'll start monitoring for the moths, they'll start reporting them, but it's sort of a wait and see at this point. We don't know how their populations fared over the winter. We don't know how much more widespread they'll be in 2008.
We'll close out our look at insect pests by switching to the soybean and the bean leaf beetle. Steffi Hedges is just a bit on this one. He thinks the cool, wet weather that has slowed field progress will have delayed the crop enough that it's out of danger from the first generation of the bean leaf beetle. But there is a chance it has not. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. We're joined now by Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 7 grain elevators in East Central Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Let's start by not talking about East Central Illinois, but St. Louis and the Mississippi River. I think it's crested.
Yep. Looks like the it's crested at St. Louis. Good news, bad news. The good news is it looks like the crest is about 2 foot lower than what they were expected. The bad news is that lower crest has come because of broken levees upstream. So flooded farm fields and logistical problems, but that's taken some of the pressure on the metro area off.
Mm-hmm. Flooded farm fields, logistical problems. How long do we have to wait for traffic to resume?
We're probably good for at least 10 days on the river, depending on what weather looks like. Forecast now looks real good for not having heavy rainfall. I think if we get some 0.5 to 1 inch slow rains out there, that we'll be able to handle that pretty well. Then we'll have to go back in and reassess the damage, you know, not just to the fields that are underwater, but there's railroad bridges that are washed out, a lot of roads and highway bridges in Iowa. You know, we've seen several grain elevators that have been destroyed or damaged, some of them under floodwaters or surrounded by floodwaters. We've seen some, you know, pretty dramatic pictures out there of silos that had beans in them, got wet, the beans expand. And then that huge, tremendous hydraulic pressure from those swelling soybeans just blows these concrete sidewalls out. And that's, what, 6-8-inch reinforced concrete that they're blowing out? It's amazing.
And it's going to stink, too.
It's going to stink terrible.
It's going to really stink. Tell me quickly what your bids are for the day.
We are at 689 at Paxton on nearby corn, 709 on new crop, beans 1508 and 1420.
Basis expected to get better? You've got 10 seconds.
In theory, we'd expect to see the basis better, but the freight availability to take advantage of it is keeping that from happening in actual practice.
Okay, thanks much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report.
It's National Vanilla Milkshake Day. The milkshake, as first defined in 1885, was an alcoholic whiskey drink containing eggs. It was not until the turn of the 20th century that milkshakes became wholesome drinks made with ice cream. By the way, the history of the electric blender and milkshake are interconnected. Before the widespread availability of electric blenders, milkshakes were more like eggnog. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, Sir Frederick Gowland Hopkins was born. He discovered what we now call vitamins, essential nutrients needed to maintain health. Hopkins fed young rats a basic diet containing salts and a purified mixture of lard and starch. After some time, Hopkins observed the animals stopped growing. The addition of milk to the lard and starch diet induced growth. In 1920, Dmitry Ivanovsky died, a Russian microbiologist. He was the first to identify the characteristics of organisms that later were named viruses. Ivanovsky was commissioned in 1890 to study a mysterious disease that was killing tobacco crops. He determined that something in the sap transferred the disease from plant to plant. And after more research, he concluded an invisible parasite was the culprit. And in 1977, the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline fully opened. It takes oil 38 days to travel 800 miles from the oil fields to the port of Valdez. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to take our daily look at the agricultural weather forecast with us this afternoon. Steve Hilberg, he's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me first, since you're a climatologist, about the weather that we've had, the river system in Illinois, parts of Iowa, how things are looking at this point.
Well, I tell you, looking at the river stage map this morning is a big improvement over what just it was a few days ago, where most of the rivers in eastern Iowa were at major flooding and, in many cases, record flooding, and not just by a couple of inches, but by a couple of feet. But we're starting to see things go down. In fact, Cedar Rapids is down to minor flood level at this point, and we're still seeing major flooding along the Mississippi, what's categorized as major flooding from Rock Island south and probably to, down to Clarksville on the Mississippi. And we'll see high river levels here probably for about another week. It's going to be a while before we get all this water downstream. But providing we don't get any kind of major convective systems like we had 2 weeks ago, things should return back to normal, at least in terms of river level. I'm sure the folks who are affected by this will be a long time recovering. But in general, we're looking at improving weather condition.
And speaking of improving weather conditions, what do we look like for this weekend here in the Midwest, in this part of the world, based on some really good weather in the past few days?
Yeah, this has been, I don't remember a week like this in summertime where we've had these kind of low dew points, pleasantly warm temperatures, breezy conditions. This was perfect for drying out fields. And I did notice a number of producers out in fields this week, Todd, doing some replanting where things have been washed out from the stuff earlier in the month. But we believe it or not, with all the water that we've been talking about for the last week, we really do need some rain.
Mm-hmm.
Topsoils have dried. And in fact, far southern Illinois missed out on a lot of the rain that hit the central and northern parts of the state and the Midwest. So we really could use some rain. And there are some scattered showers right now showing up on radar from Iowa across northern Illinois. Nothing terribly heavy at this point, so we're not looking at any real flood exacerbation. But there is a weak cold front dropping south, and that'll bring a chance for showers and thunderstorms today. And to be honest, what it looks like, we're going to see sort of a typical summertime pattern with the possibility of afternoon showers and thunderstorms here for the next couple of days. But most of the activity will be widely scattered, and most people won't see any rain, but there certainly will be that possibility. And with temperatures just about near normal.
Pop-ups that are hit and miss and go away quickly then, right?
Yeah, pretty much so. There may be a few clusters, especially down south, where we got a little disturbance moving through. But, again, they can use some rain down there. So as long as it doesn't get excessive, I think we'll be in good shape.
Anything further out that you see?
No, actually, it looks like a pretty typical summer pattern, actually, for the next week or two. They're looking at some maybe heavier rain up in Iowa again and across the northern Midwest, but not excessively so, but probably more than they want to see at this point.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberger is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. And he's located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to hear what Steve had to say, again, you can do that right there on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Remember, you can pick up Commodity Week, our weekly look at the marketplace, a half-hour-long program after 6 o'clock Central Time this evening on that website. And you can sign up for our free weekend marketing newsletter, too. It's on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good weekend.